Today's episode is from my interview on Spartan Up, podcast with the incredible entrepreneur, Joe DeSena. And we're going to learn from Joe so many of the tricks and trades about how to distinguish ourselves, especially toughness. Let me know your favorite part of today's episode and ask me questions every Friday live for free, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget to join my text community, 949-298-2905. And you can always email me at david@dmeltzer.com. This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
We've been friends for, God, it's got to be
over 10 decades. Yeah.
10 plus years. And you've built, which is surprising, right? Because social media is for these young teenage, you were in the game early.
Yeah, I got lucky. I met Gary Vaynerchuk 3 years ago. And I did a lot of content just because I was on stages and trainings.
Yeah.
And he convinced me, he was starting a sports agency.
Only three years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just three for the social media stuff.
Yeah.
And he convinced me that the content that I had could be utilized, and I became kind of the old man of Instagram. And it was best decision. You know what I like about it? It's one thing to capture what you do, another to amplify it. The amplification is extraordinary, but the most intriguing thing to me is I've created a 20-year strategy on the perpetual nature of content. And I use my age and experience because I know that there's no 20-something-year-old on Musical.ly or TikTok that understands that you can build a library. We were talking about Ken Blanchard earlier,
yeah,
right? Bob Proctor. These are my mentors, and they Brian Tracy.
So you're saying the old wise folks have systems around media. This is just a different delivery system.
And it's bigger and better than ever before.
Right.
And most
reaches further, faster.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And language-wise, it's going to change in the next few years as everything will be translated automatically into the native tongue of whoever's watching it.
Well, anybody listening that works at Google, I lived in Japan for a year. I cannot get my Safari to give me anything except in Japanese.
That's awesome.
I'm dead serious. So I'm looking for anything on my computer, it comes up in Japanese.
That's
so
awesome.
So if you can figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I always tease my kids because I have, you know, two in college. I said, I really, other than training your brain to understand how to learn a language, I think it's a waste of time to learn a language because eventually you'll just have an app that translates everything immediately.
Yeah, but then that would kind of like, not that I want to take the other side of it, but it was kind of cool that you and I learned to read maps.
Yeah.
Like people should learn some skills. Everything shouldn't just be talking to Alexa or Siri, right?
So it's really interesting because you're someone who trains people. I actually think that we know about this much of the brain and how, like, I'd like to see the Spartan races for the brain.
Yeah.
Right? I'd like to participate in the death race for the brain where you're like mentally so exhausted.
Let's stop there for a second because I just had this conversation with somebody. Most of us fail, I believe, to realize that doing something hard physically is for the brain because the brain is begging you to stop and you got to fight with yourself to keep going. Does that make
sense? Yeah, and I think that's the ego side of the brain. And what I'm more referring to is the hyper-technical side of which areas of the brain learn a language.
Got you, like calculus,
example. That's a different side. Or even reason. But the most important part of the brain is what you're mentioning, because I tell people all the time, I think my success comes is that I'm practicing ending fear. Literally, like if someone asks you, where is your success from? Every day what I'm doing is practicing ending fear, realizing and being aware of when I have a need to be right, offended, afraid, anxious, frustrated, all the ego-based emotions that you're talking about that I think are easiest to train because I had 3-a-day football practices when I was in college, weighing 147 pounds. My mom woke me up at 5 a.m. every morning.
Right.
That's what created the brain ego side of, you know.
It's funny because because of Spartan, I've met a lot of MMA fighters, SEALs, Delta Force, wrestlers, high-level Olympians.
Yeah.
And you shake their hands and you could almost feel that there's no ego. They're very humble. They have gratitude because I think they've gotten just pounded. It just got pounded out of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was with Adrian Peterson in his last game for the Redskins, and literally you were saying that. He has the strongest handshake I've ever felt.
Yeah.
But that's what I felt through that even was humble, gracious. Right. Like, he grew up so tough that to him, at his age, running in the NFL is nothing.
You know what? I remember reading Arnold Schwarzenegger's book when I was a kid, Pumping Iron.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of pages in there about when he was insecure, like all of us, right? And he had ego, and he needed to fight with people and prove who he was. But once he became who he was, he didn't need to do that anymore. He already knew who he was, right? It's the difference between...
Mike Tyson's like that. He's a wholly different person
than
he was. He needed to hurt. Like, he went into the ring, unlike Sugar Ray Leonard, who tell you, I never wanted to hurt anyone, which is odd for a world champion.
Sure.
But Mike Tyson, he wanted to hurt you.
Yeah.
And now, you know, ever since his daughter's death, he completely shifted the paradigm of how he saw things.
Yeah.
And he's much more gentle, enlightened. And he always tells me, I could never go into a ring because I'm not the same person.
You could see it in those early days, in those fights. He wanted to hurt people. And
yeah,
he,
no matter how
did.
Big you were, you didn't want to stand in front of him. We represented Evander Holyfield when I ran Lee Steinberg, the sports agency.
Wow.
And Evander, who is a massive man, would even say that, you know, fighting him was the greatest fear. Because it was like Ray Lewis. I said, how are you the best player defensively of all time? Because you're not the fastest, strongest, or even the skill-wise the best. He said, because I'm the only one I know that's willing to die when I step on a field. And I know I'm willing to die. And I think Mike Tyson was the same way. It was like the Rocky, right?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So, and you grew up, and let's go back to your, you grew up in?
Akron, Ohio. I was born there. Yep. My dad left when I was 5. Educator, my mom, talk about thresholds.
You were the youngest?
Middle. Okay. Middle young.
Yep.
Out of 6, 5 boys, 1 girl. The interesting thing is my mom wanted everyone to be educated. She was a second grade teacher who came home, packed our dinners into a paper bag, put us into a Country Squire station wagon, filled up turnstiles at the 7-Eleven and the Lawson's in Akron so we could eat.
Wow.
Had the older siblings read to the younger. Everything was about academics. I just wanted to be rich. Not for me. I literally changed my life because I caught my mom crying over financial stress when I was 5. Right. My dad left. And in my mind, I was super happy. The only time I wasn't happy is I kept catching my mom upset about money.
Right.
So in my head, I'm like, shit, I'll be rich.
Right.
They can be doctors. My mom had a saying, doctor, lawyer, or failure. And I'd say, no, I'm going to be rich. Doctor, lawyer, or failure. That'll get you the money you need, but I want to buy you a house and a car, Mom. If you're a doctor or a lawyer, David, you'll be able to buy me a house, I promise.
Right.
And I just fought that the whole way along. I say I fought it the whole way along. So I graduated law school. I didn't fight it. As soon as I graduated law school, I decided to do what I want.
And all successful?
Yeah, my siblings all went to the Ivy Leagues. There was no B's in my house except for me. I'm the only one to get a B.
How did she afford it? All scholarships?
All scholarships. Full academic scholarship. Even me, it was full scholarship.
1% of 1%.
Yeah.
Single mom, right?
Yeah.
Very little money and, produces that kind of outcome.
Harvard, Penn, Columbia. And it's not just undergrad. It was, you know, 2 at MBA for Columbia, University School of Economics. My brother went to Harvard, got into Harvard Med School, became a rabbi, got a PhD in social ethics. Like, they always say there's 2 things to think about. One is the drive, which can really create new opportunity.
Yep.
But you have to realize what I believe is your unconscious competency. I believe looking past into personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions of your great-grandparents, grandparents, and your parents at the very least, very important because you can see where some of your potential is and where your greatest potentials are.
That kind of conversation, that kind of thinking took place in the house?
No, that took place later on in life. What took place in the house was study. My mom woke us all up at 5 a.m.
Right.
It kept us all out of trouble. I told you earlier, my mom was a black belt, third degree black belt in the martial art of Jewish guilt.
Yeah.
That was a driving force. Like, all of us respected my mom so much. And I'm not sure that exists even in my own house. I dream about it, but I look at those 6 kids, and if my mom had a tear in her eyes, we would all lie in front of a bus for her. Right. Because every morning, I get choked up because I'm still 51 years old.
Yeah.
What she did for us
drove
us. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a really important part about parenting. It's not what she said.
Yeah.
You know, it's how she said it and what she did.
Yeah.
Without,
she modeled that hard work behavior. She modeled that. You saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, here's the interesting thing that crushed me. My dad left at 5, when I was 5. Super successful. It's the 70s, so he didn't pay child support.
Right.
What they call a deadbeat dad. Married a girl closer to my age than his.
Wow.
And here's the worst thing. This is where this choking up comes from because I haven't fully processed it. I was the one in the backseat telling my mom, why can't you be more like my dad? You're such a loser.
Oh,
right?
That's a tough one.
As a little boy, but then luckily by the time I was 10, I realized my dad was an overseller, back-end seller, liar, manipulator, right, and cheat. And believe it or not, my life changed. I was a multimillionaire in my 30s when I realized that I was an overseller, a back-end seller, a liar, a manipulator, and a cheat. And I had to confront, luckily my wife, my best friend, and my father of all people helped me confront the truth that I needed to change or I'd be the richest man in the cemetery.
And what, so, but you had some tough times financially around that time?
When I was 32, I was CEO of the first smartphone. I got into technology out of law school by accident, made a fortune, owned real estate, a golf course, ski mountain.
What year is this?
In 99.
Okay.
So, and then by 2008, I was a multimillionaire. 2006, though, is when my transformation happened. I was so full of myself, so egotistical. I'd bought my mom a house 9 months out of law school. Wow. I was a millionaire, bought our house and a car. I thought I was Midas. Everyone else thought I was Midas. That's all they were telling me. I thought money bought everything, happiness, love. I married my dream girl from the fourth grade. I mean, every single thing you could think of. In fact, when I built my home in Rancho Santa Fe, it's the only time in my life I remember looking up and saying, wow, I'm not happy. And that's where I started become self-entitling myself, buying more things, different things, surrounding myself with the wrong people, the wrong ideas, using, I was always extremely athletic. My dream was to be a professional football player. I played college football at 147 pounds. I had a lot of grit, but I wasn't good enough.
Right.
But literally, I completely gave away everything because I was living the wrong life. I stopped working out. I was drinking a lot. I was doing other things I shouldn't be doing, hanging out at places I shouldn't be. And luckily, my wife,
This is mid 2000s?
2006.
Yep.
I was CEO of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment.
Okay.
And this is where my quantum shift took place. My wife, literally, I came home 5:30 in the morning after partying with Little John the Rapper at the Grammy Awards. And she literally said, I'm not happy. She had never told me. Like, in my mind, I looked around the huge houses and Ferrari and everything. And I was offended.
Right.
Very offended. I went to bed pissed. Woke up in the morning, she was still pissed at me. I started thinking, I need a divorce lawyer because she's leaving me. I went to law school. Who's the best one I know? Yeah. This is where my mind was. Then I looked in my closet, and there was a 30th birthday gift that my dad gave me. He gave me a jacket with no pockets. It was the first warning that my dad said, I wanted to remind you of me. And I got mad at him. I'm like, I'm nothing like you. You're a liar, a cheat, right? And I looked at that jacket in the closet, and I'm like, oh, shit, I'm just like my dad. Like, literally.
Right.
And I went out, and my wife told me to take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become. And I wrote down four values: gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and inspiration. Those were the four things that made me. And
How old the kids were young?
Yeah, only three at the time. So I had three daughters under 10 at the time. Yep. And it wasn't overnight, right? I told my wife, I'm committed to doing this.
Right.
But it took literally almost 2 years until I lost everything. We were wealthy. Everything was going our way. She saw warning signs.
Sure.
But by 2008, I lost over $100 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's where, but I was ready for that. That was not, I'm a weirdo because I didn't have to hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
Rock bottom for me was my wife putting me in my place because I did not want to lose her.
Yeah.
And she shamed me into realizing who I'd become, which wasn't very impressive.
Could always make more money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Renewable resource.
That's right. That's right. That's an amazing story. And then when did you start to feel good?
Again?
Yeah.
So, you know, through that, I started watched the movie The Secret. I started reading different things that I was so resistant. I started meditating and working out again.
Yeah.
The meditation, so I woke up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
every day. Meditated for 20 minutes and then went to go work out a minimum of an hour a day.
Nice.
Which I live by. I work out a minimum, actually focus in on my health, a minimum of an hour a day, every single day. And I'm in much better shape than I was way back then.
Yeah. And the kids, how'd they handle the whole?
So a lot of, the oldest one was 10 when I went bankrupt. And she had the hardest time because we moved from a huge home, having everything, to a rented house with rented furniture, one car.
It's good for her though.
Oh, it was.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, she might not know it at the time.
She's doing
what does she say now?
Oh, yeah. You can see it's funny because as the kids, because I have, 20 to 9, the youngest one is back because he only knows great success.
Right.
Right. Right?
Yeah.
And the 20-year-old and the 18-year-old have a lot more grit. Yeah. And then I'm working on the two younger ones, not entitling them and figuring out, because they can have whatever they want now, but I'm not into that at all. And my wife's extremely tough. Yeah. So I'm very lucky to have her.
You might need to, I always thought maybe fake tough times.
Kids.
Hey, listen, we got to go sleep outside for a month.
You know, it's good. my wife, they call her cheap, but she's that, right? I'm like, yeah, she's tough. You know, I can't, she's the boss. I lost everything. She's in charge of all the finances. She's like, I'm not spending that. Because my heart is
you want to just do it.
Oh, yeah, I give up everything. I'm the
worst.
Because
you didn't have it as a kid.
Right.
Right.
I'm not over that.
And that's a failure. That happens a lot. You see that happen where the person becomes successful, didn't have it as a kid, wants to overcompensate, and ends up destroying the kid.
And that would be me if I didn't have my wife. I would absolutely, all four of my kids, I just cannot say no. And I love getting scolded in front of them when I don't say no. And my wife literally is so strong. She's like, no, I don't care if I'm the bad guy. He's not giving you that.
I love it.
Yeah.
So 2008, you go bankrupt. And then how do you rebuild?
So
you don't just wake up one day and start rebuilding.
So I had one day of depression, and what I decided to do when I went bankrupt was to seriously focus in on how do you make money. So money was the currency of this world. And it didn't buy me happiness, but what I knew about it was if I had it, I could shop for what I wanted. And if I shop for the right things, I'd be happy. So for example, my 50th birthday, I bought 2 community centers in Africa. I've never been more happy in my life.
Nice.
When you're buying drugs and alcohol and Ferraris, that's not going to work.
Sure.
So I literally sat back and said, how can I make a lot of money? And I realized that I'd always been good to people. I had great relationship capital. I knew really rich people.
Yeah.
So I went to a gala in Las Vegas with Larry Ruveau from Southern Wine and Spirits.
Nice.
And I went to all the rich people that I knew, Mr. Adelson, Mr. Wynn, all these guys. And I said, hey, I need to make money. I know how to make money. What do you need? And I literally found my first deal to go get something and create a margin. It was watches that we could take over. And so I started, and I was already CEO of Lee Steinberg, the sports agency.
Right.
But to me, I know a lot of people are in different perspectives of money.
You wanted to get back.
Yeah, real money.
Yeah.
Like Lee's was an amazing job and he's an amazing mentor, but that's a 6-figure salary.
Sure.
It's not the kind of money that I could know that I could make a lot of money, help a lot of people with. And so I created this void for myself. I kept saying that everything I have is coming through me for others now, because what I realized was I had a worthiness problem. Because I grew up with nothing, my mom made $17,000 a year, and I had made my most, I think, was $17 million in 1 year. Wow. And I had this worthy, like, why am I, I'm not worthy of this. And so I had a problem processing what I received.
Yeah.
And once I realized that everything I received was for others, then I cleared that energy and I started studying energy like meditation and transformational leadership, all the great, you know, Bob Proctor, you know, Sharon Lecter, these great people that have written. I started studying The Course in Miracles. That's a deep, deep spiritual text. But I started combining two currencies in my life, money, the object energy you put into flow to get what you want. And then faith, one of the biggest things that I learned, and it's a great lesson, was about fear. People are motivated by fear. And I started realizing that I was not motivated by fear. Fear is a soul-sucking energy. But what fear does that confuses most people, especially me, was I became hyper-focused when I was fearful. And when you're hyper-focused, you get extremely consistent and disciplined and persistent in what you do. That at this pragmatic frequency, this world, makes you productive, right? When you're extremely focused.
Yeah, yeah.
So fear focuses us, but in the end, it's going to exhaust you because it creates interference and corrosion to what I believe I'm always connected to. I believe that I'm always connected to the greatest power of source of energy, light, and knowledge ever created, that there's more kilowatts in my thumb to light up Manhattan, and I'm just getting in the way by creating all of this interference. And how can I harness all of this to come through me to help other people?
And so give me some examples of how you're helping people.
So in Africa, I'm the chairman of Unstoppable Foundation, which creates sustainable communities, education, financial, health, all of that. And it's really transforming. We've done, I mean, thousands and thousands of people. I'm the chancellor of Junior Achievement University. Entrepreneurship, I think, is going to save the world. I think some of the global initiatives and global problems we have, it's going to take an entrepreneur to fill the hole in our environment, in our atmosphere.
Sure.
They'll figure it out.
And clean the ocean.
Yeah, clean the ocean, yeah. Dissolve things.
Yeah.
You know, all of the things I think entrepreneurs. So I'm the chief chancellor of Junior Achievement University. We have 100 million alumni. We are the seventh biggest NGO in the world. But I recruited Bob Proctor, Brian Tracy.
Wow.
You know, Sharon Lecter, David Corbin, these great authors to donate all of their content to entrepreneurs 15 to 25 years old.
Love it.
And working here in New York with SAP Innovation University as well.
Yeah.
And so on the 17 global initiatives, all focused in on entrepreneurship. So that's my national type of thing and international. And then just my business partner is Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. Talk about pain thresholds. Most people, everybody wants to forget it, but he spent 6 years in Canada before they let him into the NFL, where he spent 17 years playing to be the first African-American in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
I always say, you want pain? Try sitting in Edmonton, right, knowing you're the best quarterback in the world.
You can't get in.
You can't get in. And winning every Grey Cup every year going, okay, they're going to let me in. These are the type of things that make success and that you look back. Warren, one of my favorite things, because it is in line with what you and I believe, he'll always say how grateful he was for Canada, because he truly believes that if he would have made the NFL right out of Washington when he was MVP of the Rose Bowl, he wouldn't even made the Hall of Fame.
What do you got coming up?
Doing the Beyond the Secret. We're launching the movie, which is the sequel to the movie The Secret, which started kind of as a catalyst from my resistant behavior. It changed the way that I looked at things, and I started thinking about the laws of attraction, the laws of the universe, and really setting
that's
me
forth. That's fun that you got. That's full circle, like you
full
said.
Full circle. Yeah. Think and Grow Rich, I was in the book, the new book, the movie. I still read Think and Grow Rich every day. I read A Course in Miracles every day.
I see my son, my oldest son is reading Think and Grow Rich in his room.
It's a great book. I mean, I really believe in this mathematical equation for my life. What I pay attention to, and then give intention with productivity and accessibility. How much value, activity, intent in what I'm doing will equal the coincidences that I'm looking for.
Right.
And the coincidences to me are mathematical equations, the coinciding of the attention and intention that I'm giving, and that I start trusting it more and more and more the more that I practice it. That's why I keep reading about how the greatest business people and greatest minds in the world have thought. I study history because human nature never changes. Oh, my mom taught me that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it really helps me out. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you'd like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.